The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
We're joined in the studio now by the Fianna Fáil leader, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, An Tánaiste Micheál Martin. Thank you very much for joining us. But before I ask you anything, I'd like you to listen to something, please. Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty on this programme yesterday in relation to the news that the government is getting the Apple tax money that you didn't want.
In any other scenario, you would have a government minister after a government minister and probably the Taoiseach even wrestling the mic to try and get on your show to tell the Irish people how good a day this is. But the problem is they've got serious egg in their face, because not only did they call this wrong all the way through, but they went to quite sufficient lengths to actually make sure that we never got a penny of this money. This 13.8 billion euro now that is deemed as lawfully ours should have been paid to us throughout this period. And not only did they argue that we shouldn't get the money, they spent millions of taxpayers' money, your listeners' money, into giving it to lawyers and to consultants to try and argue the case that not a penny of this money should come forward. So I'm not surprised that they're licking their wounds today and not showing their face in relation to this type of debate.
So, Micheál Martin, you were in opposition at the time when this initially came up in 2016, but you supported the government in its decision to fight the European Commission over this, and you continue to do so while in government. So, why did you do that? Have you egg in your face now?
Absolutely not, and Piers Doherty is wrong. And remember, Sinn Féin opposed our corporation tax regime for 25 to 30 years until they got sense. We would never have had an apple in Cork if Sinn Féin's policy ruled the roost at the time. And there are now 6,000 jobs in Cork. And we've many very solid multinationals in this country over a 30 to 40 year period that have given extraordinary employment and changed and transformed the nature of our country and our industry. So we took that action, first of all, to defend the independence of our revenue commissioners, who are independent in the tax arrangements and in terms of the rules that they lay down. And secondly, we took the case to protect jobs, because one of the fundamental planks of our industrial policy, and I was a Minister for Enterprise for 4 years, I've met many multinational companies who have come into Ireland since, and a fundamental requirement is certainty of policy and continuity and certainty around agreements and frameworks that you put in place that they're not going to change from government to government. And that was that's been a fundamental foundation stone behind the success we've had as a country in attracting a lot of jobs through foreign direct investment, retaining those jobs and adding to them. And they're highly paid jobs in our economy. And the proof of it is in the significant increases and sustainability of corporation tax revenue over the last decade. So it's been a long-term policy. We stood over that policy. We didn't agree with the decision of the commitment. And what we demonstrated
was... And so you lost at the European Court.
And we lost in the courts. And we accept, I mean, there are many cases fought in courts involving countries and involving the European Commission. The first court, the lower court, upheld the Irish position. And this went to an appeal court. So it was a legally, highly, closely contested case. It wasn't black and white, as some might suggest.
So are you embarrassed by the outcome, or are you happy with it, given
I don't take lectures from Piers Doherty, because I think it took Sinn Féin decades to understand the optimal industrial strategy and policy for Ireland.
But are you embarrassed by the outcome?
No,
or are you happy that, well, you fought the fight on behalf of the revenue commissioners, also fought on the side of Apple as a major multinational, but in the end of it all, you can just say, well, we did our bit, but now we'll take the money and spend it.
We did more than a bit. I think it is important that companies who come into Ireland know that we won't be chopping and changing every couple of years, or that we won't be reneging on positions that we adopt. And that is important, and I can't emphasise that enough. And I think in terms of the broader foreign direct investment programme and the broader number of companies in this country, they will take solace from the fact that this country will go the distance in supporting and continuing the policies that the government proclaim. They may be shot down in court. Other countries have similar experiences. Now, there is the benefit now of 14 billion in an escrow account that will come to the Irish government.
And what are you going to do
with
it?
And that would be spent on behalf of the Irish people.
How? How are you going to spend it? Because, in fairness, there was the whisper this would happen. There was a preliminary judgment which suggested it. So surely you've got contingency plans in mind for it.
Yeah, well, first of all, fortunately, because of the way the economy is going, we have surplus capital funds at the moment. So, and we will have EIB shares revenues coming forward. So we have a lot of capital at our disposal right now, and expenditures high in Ireland. However, I think this funding can be used in a number of ways. It certainly can be used for housing. It can future-proof housing funding into the future if things get rocky. We already have put money aside in funds. So you could have, you can, and there might be mechanisms that we can devise, the capitalisation of certain agencies and so on, that would be of benefit long-term in terms of the housing question. Water is another one. I've been to towns last week, to Kildare, Glanworth, Fermoy, for example, with Deirdre O'Keefe O'Brien. Big problems with no water treatment and housing not getting built. So I think there are agenda items there that I would want done in terms of that we can perhaps look at mechanisms. Now, you know, you can't just throw billions at a problem because there has to be capacity build up and people have to work to get things ready and all of that. And then we should put some of that aside also in terms of into the infrastructure fund and climate fund and nature fund or the future.
Well, hang on, there's a couple of things now arise out of that. The first is that there's lots of things that need to be done pretty quickly, aren't there?
And we're doing them. I mean, we have funds right now to do a lot of things right now.
But you're talking about putting things aside for the future. Are there not immediate things like an acceleration of housing? Is there not a need to improve the electricity infrastructure?
Yes.
The water beyond the places in Cork that you mentioned, there's enormous problems with Dublin, for example, and there's problems building a lot of these new houses and apartments because of the lack of water and electricity.
We can, of course. Yeah, and we are doing that, and we will be already prior to any of this decision. I mean, this money won't physically come on board or be available until 6 months' time, but park that for a moment. Any program you have for housing has to sustain over the next decade. And we've already put funding aside to make sure, from the infrastructure fund, to make sure that if, say, there was a recession or there was a decline in revenue, that we would have capital available to continue the level we're currently at and to sustain that over a longer period of time. Because in the past, we've had stop-start with capital. You'd have some years you'd have a lot of capital, a lot of expenditure on roads and public transport, and then there'd be reduced revenue, and you wouldn't be able to continue that. We do need to modernise our infrastructure. We do need water, and we need it quickly, and then we need more housing. And we're committed to doing that. And also, we need more people then to be able to work to build that.
And roads as well, because certainly there would be a perception that the Greens maybe have stopped in the lifetime of this government the construction of additional roads. For example, where are we at with the long overdue Cork-Limerick motorway?
That's underway in terms of the...
It's just been underway for the last how many years?
In terms of route selection, there's actually work underway in relation to that. It was cancelled before. But I think I take your point. I mean, that is a... The Greens have a different perspective on roads to Fianna Fáil and to other parties. I readily admit that. We had an agreement in the programme for government that NDP-funded projects would continue and the Cork-Limerick road is one of those and has been allocated funding. But we would give more certainty to that. That's where the funding could be of use. That we would say underpin those projects for the long haul, because those projects by definition, Matt, can take 5-6. I mean, the target date for that is 2028.
Why do they take so long?
Well, because any structure like that, first of all, you've got to do the route selection, you've got to do the planning, you've got to do design.
Other countries do these things more quickly.
Yeah, we did them quickly as well. We did a motorway. When Fianna Fáil were in office during the early 2000s, we built the motorways in this country. I can remember General McCreevy saying, let's move. He did a national programme as opposed to going through local authority by local authority. We can do it, and there's much. If you look at the capital programme right now, there's a lot of projects being done right now, but you don't hear about them because they're done. Well, ones we hear about are the bad ones that drag on for far too long.
And such as the National Children's Hospital. Yes, and I'm going to bring that up because a lot of people have focused on that again on the back of what happened with the bike shed in Leinster House. And a lot of people getting in touch with the programme yesterday were making the point, yes, we know money has to be spent on things, but can we trust the government to get value for money? Will you overpay when it comes to building things that we need and waste our money?
Look, the Children's Hospital, I think, started out wrong. And it seems, you know, the design wasn't nailed down. The PwC report reported into that. And the costs of that escalated. It will be a superb hospital when it's built, and we need it for the children of the country. But there have been many projects that have come in on budget and on time. And I've opened quite a number of roads, for example, that have come in on budget and come in on time, and other infrastructure projects. We need to be careful, by the way. One of the outcomes of the Children's Hospital is far more caution, far more regulatory frameworks governing the spending of money. That slows things down. So a public spending code does slow things down.
And
can make things more expensive, because if it's delayed too long, it becomes more expensive. And then we also have the planning situation and the planning bill that Dara Bryan is bringing through the Dáil. That is comprehensive, it's substantive, and that should streamline the planning process when we get it passed. But a lot of opposition parties opposed that tooth and nail and said we were rushing it, notwithstanding the fact that we began that process 4 years ago.
He's in government 4 years plus now at this stage, coming to a general election. And you say that things like the Cork-Limerick motorway, for example...
That's happening.
But it's all these things that are going to happen. You also promised, for example, elective hospitals. They're not going to be completed in the lifetime of this government. Right. Had they even started the groundwork?
If it wasn't for me, they wouldn't be happening at all. Right?
But when are they going to happen? How long is it since you announced the elective hospitals for Cork, Galway and Dublin to take the pressure off the public hospitals? Where are they at?
The Cork and Galway was about a year and a half ago when they were properly put before government and properly sanctioned by government.
Have you broken ground?
They haven't broken ground yet. And I accept your point, and I've put this to the HSE and to the Health Service. In terms of their capital programme, too many of these projects have been long-fingered and the process are too long. For example, the hospitals in Cork and Galway were announced, I'd say, 7 or 8 years ago. And there's people coming up with all sorts of ideas. I said, we have land in Glanmire, get on with it. The HSE have land there that the state owns. Go and build an electric
hospital. Are you not making my point for me here, though, about how long it actually takes? So we know we have the land, we know what we need, we know we have the money for it, and we don't get it done.
I'm only responsible for when I was in government.
You've been over 4 years now.
Yeah, I have, and a year and a half ago we sanctioned, after COVID, we sanctioned the elective hospitals for Cork and Galway.
Okay, let me ask you about other things. And today we've had the announcement about an inquiry into the murder of Pat Finucane. What's your position on that?
I warmly welcome it. And also the spirit in which it was announced by the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Hilary Benn, who spoke with me earlier today in confidence to tell me this was happening. There had been a court process, to be fair, and I think the Finucane family deserve enormous credit for their perseverance and patience in pursuing this, and won significant court judgments recently in terms of judgments that the British government was in violation or didn't satisfy Article 2 of the European Convention on Human Rights in respect of that case. And Hilary Benn today has announced an independent inquiry that will satisfy those requirements, and the terms of reference have to be drawn up and the judge has to be appointed. But it is a very significant announcement, and the Secretary of State did say that the British government, he said to me, you know, we're also conscious that we did not fulfil commitments that we had made to Irish governments in the past at Weston Park 2001, and in terms of after the Peter Corey inquiry.
But why not other cases in the north which are unresolved? There's lots of people still grieving, people who were murdered from all sides of the argument up there. Why aren't they getting similar inquiries like the Pat Finucane case?
They should, and that's why legacy is so important. And I met with the Secretary of State in Oxford on Friday and Saturday, in respect of legacy issues. And I've already spoken to him at Hillsborough when he was first appointed. He's already taken steps to change aspects of the Legacy Act. He has committed to repealing and replacing. We've agreed to engage with the Northern Ireland Office in respect of that legislation. We have clear asks in terms of the independence, in terms of an investigative arm, as well as an information retrieval arm. But I think he has already agreed on the immunity question in terms of there will not be immunity now, and also in terms of reopening civil cases and inquests, because the previous British government had unilaterally gone down the road of doing their own thing in respect of legacy. To be fair to this government, it is changing the situation somewhat, but there's a distance to go yet, and I think all victims need to be treated properly, fairly, in respect of the murders of their loved ones, and particularly those murdered by paramilitaries and for example, by the Provisional IRA or by loyalist groups who have not really engaged in legacy or enclosure. And that's an important point. And Canova report by John Boucher did illustrate the appalling impacts of the Provisional IRA on its own community. And it's very stark language, which for some reason didn't get articulated in the media afterwards. I was surprised by that. He also had equally strong language in respect of state collusion with and behaviour through agents in and with loyalist groups in terms of murdering of civilians.
Okay, something else I want to ask you about, particularly in your role as Minister for Foreign Affairs, but the Russian invasion of Ukraine has been incredibly important to this country because of the fact that we are now catering for so many people from Ukraine in this country. And it's essential, I think, that we support Ukraine to get the Russian invader out. Who do you want to see winning the US presidential election, given what was said overnight, particularly by Donald Trump, in relation to ending the war in Ukraine?
Well, we normally do not embroil ourselves in the elections of other countries.
But is it not important when you see what he's saying?
Absolutely important. And I'm in no doubt that without the support of the United States, and I think President Biden has been very, I think, balanced, forceful, impactful in his support of Ukraine, both militarily, but also judging it in terms of making sure we don't all end up in a major nuclear war. And so he's had to tread that fine line. And in terms of giving broader support. And that support is essential, not because I met today with the Latvian foreign minister who came to Dublin. And she was making the point to me that it's existential for Latvia. It is existential for Estonia. It's existential for Lithuania, Poland and others. That's how, and it's very important that we see it through the prism of our European.
But if Trump wins
college,
power, Trump is saying that America is stumping up too much money in defence of Ukraine. He wants Europe to do it instead.
Europe is doing it.
Says not enough money.
It's doing a phenomenal amount in terms of both budgetary support, not just military support, but budgetary support as well to sustain the day-to-day administration within Ukraine in terms of. And we've future-proofed that over the next 5 years in terms of a huge facility, billions of funding guaranteed and committed. Because Europe sees this very much in existential terms. Russia cannot be allowed to win. It also is in violation of the UN Charter. And we provide non-lethal military support. We provide a lot of humanitarian support, training and so on like that.
But can you ever see a situation whereby the Ukrainian people who have come here will not be able to return, that they're going to stay with us permanently?
I think many have actually gone back already or left. I mean, people may not realise, I think about 25,000 may have gone back out of the 105 or more that have come into the country. About 80,000 are still here. But there's parts of the east of Ukraine that has been destroyed. And it'll be difficult for quite a number to get back to those locations. They may want to go back to other parts of Ukraine. And that is why Putin is continuing to bomb energy infrastructure, to bomb other towns across Ukraine, to make life impossible for ordinary civilians. And it's a terrible war. And I have a real, like, I'm Minister for Foreign Affairs analysing what's going on all over the world. The nature of warfare today is shocking. Places get levelled, innocent people are being killed. Young people in military, in the armies, are being sent to the front. And Putin doesn't seem to have any moral qualm about sending thousands of these people to death.
Well, then to finish, let's talk about Gaza. And you've been to Gaza. You have seen firsthand the horrors out there. And if you're thankful and supportive of Joe Biden's efforts on behalf of Ukraine, has Joe Biden, given the influence that the United States has over Israel, done enough to stop the Israelis and what they're doing?
I think he's doing everything he can to get a ceasefire. Of that, I've no doubt. We would have been there last February. We met with officials in the White House. They were working flat out to try and bring about a ceasefire. I think at that time they thought it would be April. Israel, I think Prime Minister Netanyahu is, to me, recklessly oblivious of the stability around the world and the implications of this for his own allies. And he has
allies to the
Europe,
human suffering he's causing.
And above all, to the human suffering that he's causing, which is immense and horrific. I met with Sigrid Kaag of the United Nations, who's the UN coordinator for humanitarian aid in Gaza, and she said it's hell on earth. And she said it's absolutely horrific what is going on, and it has to stop. We need an immediate ceasefire, the release of all hostages, and we need a massive surge of humanitarian aid in there. I am satisfied that the US is doing everything it can to get a ceasefire over the line. But I believe that Prime Minister Netanyahu is putting his own political agenda before that, and perhaps taking a bet in terms of what will happen in the presidential election.
We have to leave it there. Tánaiste, Minister of Foreign Affairs and Leader of Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin, thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.